I and the Defense Department's other senior leaders who have been studying this issue over the past year have met with some of these transgender service members. They've deployed all over the world, serving on aircraft, submarines, forward operating bases, and right here in the Pentagon. Americans who want to serve and can meet our standards should be afforded the opportunity to compete to do so.
Our Two-Spirit community is standing outside of the circle, and our ultimate goal is to become a part of the circle.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. UN Human Rights Council creates LGBT watchdog, U.S. military transforms with the times, and Two-Spirit questions raise not-so-simple answers. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending July 2nd, 2016. The United Nations Human Rights Council voted on June 30th to create the organization's first ever special rapporteur or independent expert to specifically monitor and report on violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The effort was led by a group of Latin American countries, including Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Chile, Costa Rica, Mexico, and Uruguay. It passed in the UN's 47-member Human Rights Council by a vote of 23-18 with 6 abstentions. Pakistan led the opposition on behalf of almost all members of the Organization for Islamic Cooperation. It pushed several amendments that framed the LGBT rights proposal as a coercive measure that would impose concepts or notions pertaining to social manners, including private individual conduct, thereby subverting local values and sovereignty. But the creation of a global LGBT rights watchdog highlighted the UN's increasing attention to sexual and gender minorities. The Security Council specifically addressed LGBT rights for the first time just last year.
India's Supreme Court has rejected a plea from several out celebrities to re-examine its 2013 decision that upheld Penal Code Section 377, the British colonial-era law that punishes private consensual adult gay sex with up to 10 years in prison. Justices decided that only Parliament could repeal the law. But lawmakers in the world's second most populous country have rejected a number of attempts to do that. Celebrity chef Ritu Dalmia, hotelier Aman Nath, journalist Sunil Mehra, business executive Ayesha Kapoor, and dancer N.S. Johar were among the well-known celebrity signers. The petitioners are highly accomplished professionals, the filing noted. Despite their achievements and contributions, they are being denied the right to sexuality, the most basic and inherent of fundamental rights. Section 377 renders them criminals in their own country. But the High Court told the petitioners on June 30th that they should wait until a 5-judge panel decides pending appeals of the 2013 ruling called curative petitions. Those filings were only accepted in February of this year. The 2-judge Supreme Court panel told the celebrity petitioners this week that you can wait for a decision in those matters and then decide what to do.
Elsewhere, a landmark lawsuit in the U.S. challenging workplace bias based on sexual orientation has been settled out of court. The nation's Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, represented lesbian forklift driver Yolanda Boone in the suit filed last year in Baltimore, Maryland, alleging that she was unfairly fired from wood pallet distributor IFCO Systems after complaining about her supervisor's ongoing homophobic comments. The company denied in the settlement that it discriminated against Boone, but agreed to pay her $182,000 and donate an additional $20,000 to a foundation set up by the U.S. LGBT advocacy group, Human Rights Campaign. EEOC General Counsel David Lopez said that the settlement was the first ever resolution of a lawsuit challenging discrimination based on sexual orientation under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The Obama administration has argued that U.S. civil rights laws apply to bias based on sexual orientation and gender identity. A growing number of federal courts have agreed with that analysis.
A federal judge has dealt a major setback to proponents of a so-called religious freedom law in Mississippi. U.S. District Judge Carlton W. Reeves dramatically waited until literally a few minutes before midnight on July 1st, when HB 1523 was due to take effect, to strike it down as unconstitutional. The law would have allowed both private and government workers to refuse to serve LGBT people based on sincerely held religious belief. For example, under HB 1523, county clerks would have been able to deny marriage licenses to same-gender couples. But Judge Reeves ruled that the law violated provisions of the U.S. Constitution by authorizing arbitrary discrimination against lesbian, gay, transgender, and unmarried persons. Mississippi's Republican governor, Phil Bryant, who has enthusiastically defended the law, said in a press statement that he expects the state to file an aggressive appeal. But his attorney general has expressed reservations. Jim Hood, a Democrat, worried that an appeal could cost tens of thousands of dollars at a time when the state's budget is already forcing cuts in mental health services. He also said in a statement that the church-going public was duped by state leaders into believing that HB 1523 protected religious freedoms. He pointed out that no faith leader has ever been forced to officiate the wedding of a same-gender couple.
In other news, the Czech Constitutional Court has overturned a ban on adoptions by gays and lesbians living in registered partnerships. Its somewhat convoluted June 28th ruling said the ban was discriminatory because individual lesbians and gay men who aren't in such partnerships are allowed to adopt, as are other single people. The decision still doesn't allow gays or lesbians in registered partnerships to adopt as couples, only as individuals. So spouses still cannot become the legal step-parents of their partner's biological children. The 2006 law creating registered partnerships fell far short of full marriage equality and doesn't even offer rights similar to those in civil unions in other countries. But it only passed the Czech parliament with the provision that same-gender couples not be allowed to adopt children.
Back in the U.S., a federal judge ruled on June 29th that the state of Indiana must list both spouses in a same-gender marriage as parents on their children's birth certificates. U.S. District Judge Tanya Walton Pratt granted summary judgment in favor of eight lesbian couples who had sued the Indiana State Department of Health, which oversees birth certificates. The couple argued that state law wrongly forces a spouse who did not give birth to go through a costly adoption process to be legally recognized as the child's co-parent. Pratt said the state's practice violated the Equal Protection and Due Process Clauses of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment. The Indiana Attorney General's office has not yet indicated if it plans to appeal the judge's ruling, but a spokesperson for the Indiana State Department of Health said it abides by the law and will continue to do so. According to the LGBT rights group Lamb Legal, cases have led to similar rulings in Iowa, Kansas, and Utah, while lawsuits are pending in Wisconsin and North Carolina.
Speaking of the Tar Heel State, North Carolina lawmakers had touted what they called a fix this week to the highly controversial HB 2, which bans local governments from protecting their LGBT citizens from discrimination and forces trans people to use the sex-segregated public facilities, such as bathrooms and locker rooms, that correspond to the gender on their birth certificates. The so-called legislative fix by North Carolina's overwhelming Republican majority would have allowed trans people who've had gender-affirming surgeries to get a certificate of sex reassignment that would have, at least in theory, allowed them to use facilities consistent with their gender identity. The National Basketball Association, which has threatened to move its 2017 All-Star Game out of Charlotte because of HB 2, announced on June 30th that it didn't support the so-called fix. Their statement affirmed the NBA's guiding principles of inclusion, mutual respect, and equal protections for all. Lawmakers adjourned for this year on July 1st without fundamentally changing HB 2. Minority Democrats speculate that a special session to deal with the law will need to be called in order to keep the February 2017 NBA All-Star Game in Charlotte. Before they adjourned, however, the dominant Republican majority also voted to divert $500,000 from the state's emergency relief fund to defend the statute in federal lawsuits filed against it.
Updating to previous reports about anti-LGBT murders, the ultra-Orthodox Jew who stabbed several people at the 2015 Jerusalem LGBT Pride Parade, killing 16-year-old Shira Banky, was sentenced this week to life in prison for the brutal murder and an additional 30 years for the attempted murder of six other Pride marchers. A three-judge panel of the Jerusalem District Court noted in their June 26 sentencing of Yishai Schlissel that this dangerous man can no longer walk the streets of Jerusalem or any other place.
Police in Bangladesh announced in late June that they had killed a violent jihadist who was believed to have orchestrated the horrific murders in April of gay journalist Zhulhan Manhan and his fellow LGBT rights activist Mahbub Tanoi. According to a report by the online Pink News website, police claimed that the Al-Qaeda-affiliated militant known as Sharif had also been involved in the assassinations of secular bloggers, writers, and online activists.
And finally, July 1st marked the day that a new law took effect in Norway that allows trans people over the age of 16 to change their legal gender by filling out a simple form. The law passed in the Norwegian legislature by a vote of 79-13 on June 6th. Norway becomes the fourth nation in the world to abandon complicated bureaucratic procedures that were previously required to change legal gender, joining Denmark, Malta, and Ireland. In a truly progressive move, parents in Norway can now also authorize a legal gender change for a child as young as 6 years old.
That's NewsWrap for the week ending July 2nd, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Carol Myers.
Australians went to the polls on July 2nd for their national elections, elections that could affect the future of marriage equality there. The results were too close to call when this program was going into distribution on July 4th, so bite your nails until next week for This Way Out's comprehensive coverage.
The term came about in 1990 at a Native LGBTQ conference in Winnipeg.
It stands for a small tent with a big meaning. You'll understand what we mean later in the program. With a heart to serve, so I can fight another day. With a heart to serve, light will shine in this dark place. With a heart to serve, true hope is not far away. Heart to serve, impact the whole human race. Transgender people in the U.S. military were able to shed their camouflage gear on June 30th. Gabrielle Castellan reported on the story for the Pacifica Evening News.
The Pentagon announced today that transgender people will be allowed to serve openly in the U.S. military, thus ending one of the last bans on service in the armed forces. Harry Horton of Feature Story News has the details.
5 years after the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on gay and lesbian troops ended, the United States military has lifted another barrier to service. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter has long wanted to allow transgender service members, with thousands already thought to be serving in secret.
I'm here today to announce some changes in the Defense Department's policies regarding transgender service members. And before I announce what changes we're making, I want to explain why. There are three main reasons having to do with our future force, our current force, and matters of principle. The first and fundamental reason is that the Defense Department and the military need to avail ourselves of all talent possible in order to remain what we are now, the finest fighting force the world has ever known. Our mission is to defend this country. And we don't want barriers unrelated to a person's qualification to serve preventing us from recruiting or retaining the soldier, sailor, airman, or marine who can best accomplish the mission. We have to have access to 100% of America's population for our all-volunteer force to be able to recruit from among them the most highly qualified and to retain them. Now, while there isn't definitive data on the number of transgender service members, RAND looked at the existing studies out there, and their best estimate was that about 2,500 people out of approximately 1.3 million active duty service members, and about 1,500 out of approximately 825,000 reserve service members are transgender. With the upper end of their range of estimates of around 7,000 in the active component and 4,000 in the reserves. Although relatively few in number, we're talking about talented and trained Americans who are serving their country with honor and distinction. We invest hundreds of thousands of dollars to train and develop each individual. And we want to take the opportunity to retain people whose talent we've invested in and who've proven themselves. And this brings me to the second reason, which is that the reality is that we have transgender service members serving in uniform today. And I have a responsibility to them and to their commanders to provide them both with clearer and more consistent guidance than is provided by current policies. We owe commanders better guidance on how to handle questions such as deployment, medical treatment, and other matters. And this is particularly true for small unit leaders, like our senior enlisted and junior officers. Also, right now, most of our transgender service members must go outside the military medical system in order to obtain medical care that is judged by doctors to be necessary. And they have to pay for it out of their own pockets. This is inconsistent with our promise to all our troops that we will take care of them and pay for necessary medical treatment. I and the Defense Department's other senior leaders who have been studying this issue over the past year have met with some of these transgender service members. They've deployed all over the world, serving on aircraft, submarines, forward operating bases, and right here in the Pentagon. And while I learned that in most cases, their peers and local commanders have recognized the value of retaining such high-quality people, I also learned that the lack of clear guidelines for how to handle this issue puts the commanders and the service members in a difficult and unfair position. One service member I met with described how some people had urged him to leave the military because of the challenges he was facing with our policies, and he said he just wouldn't quit. He was too committed to the mission, and this is where he wanted to be. These are the kind of people we want serving in our military.
Critics say lifting the ban on transgender people could harm the military's readiness for combat, but several studies commissioned by the Pentagon reached the opposite conclusion. Harry Horton, Washington.
For people coming into the military, the plan says that those with gender dysphoria, a history of medical treatments associated with gender transition, and those who have had reconstruction surgery may be disqualified as military recruits. Unless a medical provider certifies that they have been clinically stable in the preferred gender for 18 months and are free of significant impairment.
The third and final reason for the change, also important, is a matter of principle. Americans who want to serve and can meet our standards should be afforded the opportunity to compete to do so. After all, our all-volunteer force is built upon having the most qualified Americans. And the profession of arms is based on honor and trust. Army Chief of Staff General Milley recently reminded us of this when he said, and I quote him, "The United States Army is open to all Americans who meet the standard, regardless of who they are." Embedded within our Constitution is that very principle, that all Americans are free and equal. And we as an Army are sworn to protect and defend that very principle. And we are sworn to even die for that principle. So if we in uniform are willing to die for that principle, then we in uniform should be willing to live by that principle. It's General Milley. In view of these three reasons to change our policy, last July I directed the commencement of a study to identify the practical issues related to transgender Americans serving openly and to develop an implementation plan that addresses those issues consistent with military readiness, because our mission, which is defending the country, has to come first. I directed the working group to start with the presumption that transgender persons can serve openly without adverse impact on military effectiveness and readiness, unless and except where objective, practical impediments are identified. I think it's fair to say this has been an educational process for a lot of people here in the department, including me. We had to look carefully and deliberately at medical, legal, and policy considerations that have been evolving very rapidly in recent years. And we had to take into account the unique nature of military readiness and make sure we got it right. I'm proud of the thoughtful and deliberate manner in which the department's leadership has pursued this review. I've been guided throughout by one central question. Is someone the best qualified service member to accomplish our mission?
Commanders will have the discretion to make decisions on a case-by-case basis, including on job placement, deployments, training delays, and other accommodations. I'm Gabriela Castellan.
MSNBC's Rachel Maddow spoke with sociology professor and researcher Aaron Belkin about the end of the military's transgender ban. Belkin is the author of How We Won, Progressive Lessons from the Repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Did the internal process to come up with this policy change follow the path that was that you described in your book and that the country went through for Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal?
It did. There was quite a tailwind, quite a lot of momentum from the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Although I have to say, when I started working on this issue 3 years ago, I told a colleague that I thought it would take 10 or 15 years to end the ban. And that was just my way of saying it's going to be a really long time, and I don't know how long, and this has gone with light speed.
What do you think in terms of expected political backlash, expected foot dragging or resistance in the military? I noticed that none of the Joint Chiefs were standing up there with Ash Carter today when he made his announcement.
Yeah, the research is very clear that implementation of inclusive policy is simple. And it's not difficult to let people be who they are. And so it's true, we've heard some talk about what a complicated issue transgender service is, but it's not. The military knows what it's doing. The troops are already serving with transgender peers, and implementation is going to be a success. It's not going to be a problem.
One of the things that Secretary Carter mentioned today is that 18 other countries, including some of our closest allies, already have transgender inclusive policies for their military. Have those other countries sort of already defined best practices for how to do this right? Did that make it easier to come up with the particulars of this for the U.S. military?
It did. And as a community, we used a number of different tactics to show that transgender service works. And one of those, as you mentioned, is to point to analogous institutions. So yes, there are best practices from the Australian and the British and the Israeli militaries, but there are also best practices from federal agencies like the CIA and the FBI. So in this sense, the military is a bit of a laggard because the rest of the federal government is already inclusive to transgender people. So the military had some catch up to do.
That was San Francisco State University sociologist and researcher Aaron Belkin with MSNBC's Rachel Maddow.
Do you have a heart to serve?
Hello, I'm Billy Bean, Major League Baseball's Ambassador for Inclusion, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
We'll learn about a rich indigenous traditional culture, but first, a nod to some groundbreaking pop culture.
What a doll! Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Said to be the world's first gay doll, Gay Bob joined the world of straight toys in 1977. Inventor Harvey Rosenberg of New York made 10,000 of the dolls and sold them through mail-order ads. Gay Bob stood 12 inches tall, was anatomically correct, and had frocked blonde hair and gorgeous blue eyes. He also wore a neck chain, an earring, and an over-the-shoulder satchel bag. While a few dolls of the time were closeted, Gay Bob came with a closet box, so he could step out of the closet with pride. Today, Gay Bob is a collector's item worth as much as $100 in mint condition. Gay Bob was eventually joined on the toy shelf by Boy George as well as Gay Billy, the UK's first openly gay doll. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, John DeBoer.
Today's gender warriors can gain a lot from Native American societies, but should not take more than is freely given. This Way Out correspondent Dixie Trichel asked mental health therapist and two-spirit activist Lenny Hayes about their movement.
Two-spirit is a relatively new term, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about that for us.
It is a Native concept. The term came about in 1990 at a Native LGBTQ conference in Winnipeg. Today, when we talk about two-spirit people or Native LGBTQ, One of the things that I like to discuss is the fact that, you know, before colonization, we looked at it as being a spiritual aspect. After colonization, you know, a lot of things changed for our community. But we look at it as being more spiritual and being more involved in ceremony. A lot of our Two-Spirit people have been shunned from their own tribal communities. And so I feel that our Two-Spirit community is standing outside of the circle, and our ultimate goal right now is to become a part of the circle. But we have to remember that across the country, we have over 560-some tribes and 200 languages. Each tribe has the way that they identify. So a lot of the tribal communities don't use the term Two-Spirit. They will identify as Native LGBTQ. So it's really important to know that. And one of the things that I really, really stress is that it is a Native term. And, you know, I've done a lot of trainings in universities in regards to talking about the topic of Two-Spirit. And I've had non-Natives approach me and say, well, can I be Two-Spirit? You can't. That belongs to us. And I've had people question me and say, well, why not? And so I refer back to, do you know about historical and intergenerational trauma? And then I just sort of encourage them to research and to understand that a lot of things have been taken away from us Native people. And so that's a concept that can't be taken away from us.
Can you give us an idea about the Two-Spirit community at large?
Currently in the Minneapolis area, we do have the Minnesota Two-Spirit Society. I'm the former chairman of the board. And so the goal of the Minnesota Two-Spirit Society is to sort of support and encourage our Two-Spirit community to come out and be amongst other people. Nationally, we have some amazing Two-Spirit leaders across the country who are doing amazing work. I'm actually going to the Montana Two-Spirit Society gathering the end of July and first part of August, so I'm really excited about that because I've heard of amazing work that they're doing. We have just tons of leaders across the country. I'm always reminded by my colleagues and my friends that often sometimes we get caught up in talking about the issues that really impact the community in regards to violence. We have to remember, too, that we have some good people out there who are doing amazing work.
Two-Spirit activist Lenny Hayes was interviewed by Dixie Trichel. For more information about the Montana Two-Spirit Gathering, go to mttwospirit.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Carol Myers, Wenzel Jones, John DeBoer, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Billy Bean and Dixie Trichel contributed program material, with thanks to Pacifica Radio's Gabrielle Castellan, and as always, to Steve Pride. Princeton Marcellus and R. Carlos Nakai performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, for making this show possible. Check out the latest program information and a lot more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio at aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 3BBB Ballarat, Victoria, WVEW Brattleboro, Vermont, Trance FM Broward County, Florida, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.